Welcome back to Purple Row Radio. My name is Greg Stanwood, staff writer of Purple Row. I'm here along with, Paramount Chief Payne, Andrew Martin. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm full of sushi at the moment. It's a very good thing.
I don't like sushi. Actually,
that's
scratch that. I like it when it's just rice.
So you like rice?
Yeah, exactly. I like
it. I mean, we went to a place called Sushi High up off 32nd, and it was pretty tasty, a little expensive. We had a living social deal, so, you know, we gorged ourselves pretty good. One of the first times I've actually brought sushi home with me.
Huh.
It was tasty. Not much for presentation, but it was tasty.
Maybe they'll sponsor us now that you've mentioned them on our show.
Exactly.
With our, you know, 10 listeners.
Yeah, exactly. All 10 of you.
Okay. Well, we've got a really good interview with Grant Brisby from McCovey Chronicles up later on the show. So we're just going to go ahead and get right into our regular discussion here, kind of wrapping up how the week has gone so far. The team is 12-3 at this point. We're recording this Sunday night, pretty close to when the show is actually going to be put up online. And, you know, that's all obviously going well. So let's talk about some of the things that we've noticed over the past week or so. But actually, if we can right now, let's talk a little bit about Alan Johnson. Alan Johnson's game.
Oh, Alan Johnson
was today. And what were your thoughts on Alan Johnson? The long-awaited debut of Alan Johnson.
It was pretty much exactly what I was expecting. I mean, I was kind of hoping for him to come up with some like Greg Reynolds magic or something like that, and you know. Only two runs crossing or something like that, but honestly, for this four innings of work, he wasn't miserable. I mean, four runs in four innings is bad by definition, but I mean, it was like one run an inning, and it was never, and one of them was unearned too on a Johnny Herrera throwing error, and, it was okay. I mean,
right. It certainly could have been worse.
Considering it was an emergency start that we didn't want anyone to go on short rest, and this basically resets the rotation order.
Right.
Honestly, I mean, the fact that they won the game, it's one of those where everyone kind of, you know, wipes their brow and exhales with, from, you know, worry. I mean, like, whew, that was a close one there, but, you know, whatever. At least it was someone from our own system rather than, you know, Tim Hericola or Valerio de los Santos or something like that. That might, you know, point warning signs to, oh my gosh, the Rockies' depth has already taken a big hit, you know, earlier this year by having to start Alan Johnson. It wasn't really that. I mean, this is more kind of a convenient start. They could have. I mean, if this is later in the season, they probably would have just thrown Rodgers out there on short rest.
They would have changed, Ubaldo Jimenez's work schedule, so he would have been activated today. He was eligible to be activated today. There were two main reasons he wasn't. One being that he was working out 3 days ago and they didn't want to throw him right back into it. And secondly, because Jim Tracy wants the rotation order to be somewhat similar to normal. So that's why he's going to go on Tuesday instead of, today or tomorrow.
Yeah. And like I said, we kind of dodged a bit of a bullet throwing a blatant AAA pitcher out there, but honestly, good for him. And the one thing I did notice the entire time he was out there is that, his composure never changed. He kept just doing his thing, even though it was a very mediocre, bad kind of thing, you know, falling behind in counts and allowing singles. I mean, he walked three, struck out three, got Marlon Byrd to ground into two double plays, and watching him on the mound, his demeanor just never changed. He just sat there chewing his gum, like, you know, whatever, next batter, let's keep doing this. And I was talking to Musia, who's one of the writers for SB Nation Denver.
And a one-time guest on our show.
A one-time guest on the show and my roommate. And he was at the game. And he was, he just kind of, you know, laughed about it in general when I said the composure thing. And he said, well, he's been pitching in Colorado Springs. He's used to getting hit all over the yard. And that's kind of sad, but at the same time, it's very, very true. And none of the stuff that was hit, like, it wasn't like they were hitting everything into the gaps. It was just a lot of singles. It was death by a thousand paper cuts. And they weren't cheap singles either. They were all, for the most part, line drives into the outfield. But, I mean, this could have been much, 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 much
yes,
worse. And
yes,
he did a very admirable job for a guy who well, he may not see the majors again in his career.
He may not, but he also could at the same time. With guys like that, it's hard to tell. I mean, even if he doesn't come back up with us, he might find his way into some random opportunity somewhere down the road. It's really hard to tell.
Well, yeah. It would be, if he gets back to the majors again, it will very likely either be in a relief role, a long relief role, like the we're up by 12 or down by 12 role, and we need three innings of, you know, just go out there and throw pitches until you can't throw pitches no more. But, nah, it was good enough. I take it. I'm happy that we finally got to, the much anticipated arrival of Alan Johnson went better than expected.
Yeah.
And that we won the game.
And all, in my opinion, really all we can say is we won the game. When you have to make a start like this with, you know, an Alan Johnson type pitcher and you win, great. However it happened, you know, great.
Exactly. I mean, the Sunday game was just kind of a good game in general. They got to Dempster early and, even though it wasn't the best, well, I mean, they were able to tie the game up off of Dempster, but past that, I mean, 5-5 tie. It was just awesome that they had that eighth inning rally like they did.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jim Tracy was saying last season it would have ended up, you know, two outs, two on, needing a rally, and they would have struck out or choked out or something like that. And they ended up coming up again quite admirably. It was a good team game where. It's like the team knew, it's like Johnson's gonna need everything we can get for him, and they're talking to him in the post game saying, how'd you feel about the game, especially since you got, you know, four runs of support right off the bat. And he goes, oh, I felt great about that, and yeah, and he basically, in so many words, he basically said, yeah, I let them right back into it, but it felt good to at least have a lead for a little while there.
There you go. So.
So, congratulations, Alan Johnson, on your first major league start.
Yep. Okay, so, who else should we go along the line and talk about here? I feel like we don't really need to talk about Ian Stewart right now. We already mentioned him last weekend, the week before. He's off to the similar slow start he was before.
And for those of you wondering, he has not gotten any better. Not in a I hate Ian Stewart way, but in the same reasons we talked about, still just behind the curve, not enough playing time for him to get in the swing, still think he should be optioned,
yep.
Stuff like that. But he got a hit on Saturday night, though, on a bunt single. Because he's playing that shift, and, you know, hey, good for him. Two hits now.
Well,
but,
certainly a clever move.
And what's funny is the next inning they did the same thing right back to us.
Yeah, they did. It was in the exact same spot, too.
Yep.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, let's move on from Stewart, because we weren't going to talk about
it. Yeah.
No, I mean, the players we can mention, and I'll mention the one right off the bat, because I know we're going to catch flack if we don't, but Johnny Herrera's batting 400.
Yeah,
just keep that in mind right now.
He's batting 400, and he's also producing extra base hits, and he's also walking a lot. So
right now Herrera's he's batting 400 with a 1,115 OPS,
which is not something you would expect from any player with just an on base percentage.
He's a career 286 hitter with a career 718 OPS.
Yeah,
1,115 is otherworldly good for him, and you know. I'm still not going to admit I'm wrong here because I refuse to admit I'm wrong ever because I'm never wrong. No, I admit I'm wrong all the time, I think. But let me put it this way. I'm enjoying the crap out of watching Herrera's game right now. He is fun to watch. He's basically taking the hot streaks that everyone just kind of rolled their eyes at last year and staying hot.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer he can stay hot, the better because we could really use a guy like Herrera to keep doing what he's doing, because, you know, all the good reasons that everyone cites. And what's funny is that a lot of people are trying to say, well, Herrera's the kind of guy who you can't just look at his stat line. We can look at his stat line, and he's doing great!
Yeah.
It's like, there's a no-loss situation right now. I mean, the throwing error he made on a close double play, I mean, in, you know, retrospect, yeah, eat that ball and don't make that throw. You're not Troy Tulowitzki or Clint Barmas, but, you know, he's allowed to have errors. I mean, he's
generally
solid, very solid at second base. So, you know, I'll cry about that one later.
Mm-hmm. You know, who else is... did you have something else about him?
No, keep going.
Well, the other person who I definitely have to bring up is Dexter Fowler, who is having a really good season so far out of the leadoff spot.
Kind of. 723 OPS is not that good.
Okay.
He's at a sub 250 on base percentage as well. I'm going to disagree with you on that. He's playing great defense. I won't.
What can you tell me about the past week?
Nothing.
Oh.
No, last 7 days on Fang, according to a Baseball Reference, and this is not including Sunday's game. I regret to say that because the stat sites don't really update until the next morning, so we're kind of having to deal without today's game. But a 304 batting average, 346 on base, 435 slugging, and that's a 781 OPS. So he's doing all right. The batting average at least is good, but and he's getting work done around the horn. But I'd really like to see a bit better on his taking walks, because he's taken 2 walks in the last week, 7 on the season. And he's the kind of guy who can get on base with the addition of walks much better than he is right now. So that is an area of improvement I want to see. I don't want him to be an aggressive hitter. Mm-hmm. I mean, deep down, yes, I do. I want him to be the number two hitter who, you know, splits the gaps every other at-bat. That'd be great. But, I mean, as long as they're going to put him in the leadoff role, do get on base. You have to get on base just so, you know, everyone else can do their people on base in front of them thing.
Sure. It seems like he's walked more than that, but I guess that is just my projection of Herrera's walks onto Fowler.
Yeah. Herrera's been doing a lot of good things.
Yeah. All right. Well, if there's anybody else, we've already got 13 minutes done here, so.
Really?
Yeah.
No, it seems like less than that. I'm trying to find one split here, because on line drives. Well, no, he's doing all right on line drives. If you look at a guy's line drive splits, well, I guess technically he is actually doing worse than the league average on line drives. A 1643 OPS on line drives, which seems like a ridiculous number, but you gotta remember that line drives almost always fall for hits. At least in Dexter Fowler's case, 71.4% of the time. It's a 93, what Baseball Reference calls an SOPS plus. And for the people that are a little confused by all the extra numbers there, what OPS plus is, you take a player's OPS, which is their on-base percentage, plus their slugging percentage, and then they stack that against the league average and do a little bit of park adjustment, saying, you know, it's easier to get hits in Coors Field, harder to get hits in, you know, Petco or whatever. And then they put on a scale of 100, where 100 is exactly average. This SOPS compares him to the rest of the league on this particular split. So compared to the rest of the league's batting line on line drives, he's about 7% below normal, which is, you know, not great. We'd like to see much better. We'd like to see him doing better than that, especially on line drives. But, he's legging out ground balls well, and I don't know, he's doing some things good, and I'm hoping that this is just, I mean, it's so early still. I'm not like, oh, Dexter Fowler, he's going to be fine. I'm really not worried. It's probably just jitters from, like you said, embracing a new role and trying to settle himself into that. But moving on from Fowler right quick here, we'll be absolutely remiss if we don't mention these two players, and I'll be brief about them. But first of all, Todd Helton is batting 342 right now, and it's only like an 828 OPS, but whatever. We don't want Helton to power hit anymore. We just want him to hit a bunch of singles and drive guys along the base paths because – I mean, honestly, by the time Helton gets up, there's a good chance there's going to be somebody on second base. And that's really what I want to see out of Helton, is just getting hits. And he's been doing it. I mean, he got another hit today, which brought his average to 342. He was 1 for 4 today with a run and an RBI and a walk. So as long as he can keep up, you know, these kinds of numbers, I'm not going to complain about Helton's production. I just can't do it. I mean, we just want him to hit singles and walk, and it sounds like a two-hitter kind of thing, but we know that he's too slow to really be a decent two-hitter, and with Herrera hitting the way he is, why would you move him? Just keep doing what you're doing, Todd. But the player that really seems to be flying a lot under the radar, and maybe just because I haven't seen him mentioned as much, but Seth Smith, he's batting 313 right now, and he has an OPS of 995.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, he is he's only 48 at-bats into the 2011 season, but on a 995 OPS so far out of Seth Smith, I mean, I get the impression that he realized this is my shot to take this role and run with it. There's no more Brad Hoff. There's no other guaranteed starter to take my spot. I'm given the chance to do this, and I'm going to take this, and I'm going to run with it. And he's doing exactly that, and I could not be more impressed with him. He hasn't been amazing defensively so far, but he hasn't been bad either. He's gotten to most of the balls that he needs to get to. He's done his best on tough plays against the wall and stuff like that. And I really cannot. I mean, I have nothing but praise for Seth Smith's play so far this season.
Yeah, I don't either. I was looking for more kind of quiet, good performances, and Seth Smith, I think, has been kind of the poster child for success of the players that we have needed to come through this year, where, of course, Stewart is kind of the opposite. So
Sunday, Smith's quietly being very loud. He hit a home run and then hit a double. Those are his two hits, and then he actually got hurt, came out of the game with what seems to be a right groin strain. I haven't seen any updates on him yet. They're hoping it's not a DL kind of thing. I haven't seen any updates on it quite yet, but we'll probably have some news on that in the morning. Actually, it's his left groin, so we'll mention that. So, yeah, feel better, Seth Smith, because we, need you to come out and be good. It is said he felt tightness while legging out his double, and, he said I just tweaked it and he'll be fine in a day or two, so really, I'm not worried about him. I hope he's fine, and I hope it's something bigger than just oops, ouch, done, but yeah.
Yep. Anything more?
Exciting stuff.
Don't think there's much more to talk about today. So, with that, let's go ahead and move into the interview. And, yeah, we will see you there. All right, everyone, we're on the line with Grant Brisby of McCovey Chronicles, which is the SB Nation San Francisco Giants website. Grant, thanks for joining us.
Not a problem. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Now, are we pronouncing this right? It is Grant, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's Grant. I mean, you know, my family, sometimes they leave off the T. It might be silence.
Gran Brisby?
Well, you got to – sometimes there's like a schwa in there, so it's like hua. whatever works for you guys. Grant works fine. It's simple.
Okay.
Now, Grant, you're obviously the editor, or do you have a title for yourself? But he's the big guy in charge of McCovey Chronicles, the SB Nation Giants blog. What is your official title? Do you have one?
Yeah, it's been pretty much – I've been the only writer there since it started. I just added a stats guy. I've had a minor league guy who would come and do minor lines. So I always just thought of myself as like the guy. So you could say Grant,
nice.
Comma, the guy.
So you could say like the guy abides and stuff like that, or are we going the wrong direction here?
The guy abides. I like that.
Nice. Well, recently, you've also been, added on to write for the, SB Nation MLB hub. And, I've been very pleased to see, a few interesting comments coming up in the hot corner. Tell us a little bit about that. Like, how do you like it? How do you like writing for the regional hub as well? Or not the regional, but the MLB hub?
It's fantastic. I mean, I get to work with Jeff Sullivan and Rob Nyer pretty closely, all day. And it's been a lot of fun. I've always wanted to kind of do more of a national scope, and I've been Giants for almost 10 years now. And so it's fun to branch out and just do a little bit and follow the other teams and see what they're doing, watching a lot of games that I normally wouldn't watch. So it's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And one of the things that, almost gets a bit frustrating, like you mentioned, Giants for 10 years. I've been doing Rockies for only 2-3 years here, but sometimes it's, especially spring training, almost every single position on the field was set like the minute the players showed up, except for who's gonna be the backup catcher and who's starting at second base. So for the most part, it was kind of a boring spring there. So reaching, I can imagine that being able to stretch out and talk about other teams' predicaments or whatever may be a bit more challenging and bring an extra a little bit of perspective into your own analysis of the Giants.
Yeah, this spring was a trip. I mean, it really was. You were looking, well, who's going to be that mop-up man? Who's going to be the 12th pitcher? Who's going to be the fifth outfielder? I mean, it really was. I've never experienced a spring like it where there wasn't just that one battle. It turns out that there was some intrigue with Brandon Belt making the team after Cody Ross got hurt. But for the most part, the spring was just like, okay, we're all here. Roll call, they're here, great, let's get the season started. And then there was a month more of you know, games where you'd bring in A-ballers in the fifth inning and stuff like that. But, yeah, it was an interesting spring for sure.
So you may not – go ahead, Greg.
Oh, well, if you have more to say on this subject, go for it, because I was going to lead on to talking about Brandon Belt. But
yes, that was exactly my bridge there too. So Belt's having a bit of a tricky start here. Did you have anything else to add to the question, Greg, before we let Greg answer?
Yeah, it was reported today that they're looking to possibly activate Cody Ross before they head over here to Denver, so we might not be seeing Brandon Belt in that series. So
you would activate Cody Ross just to face the Rockies, wouldn't you? Stupid Cody Ross.
Everyone hates Cody Ross. It's like he hits like 400 with a 500 on base percentage and 800 slugging percentage, like for every team in the league except like the Pirates and the Reds. Like I don't hear about those teams. Like he's 0-for-50 against those teams, and that brings his numbers down to his career lines. Because I mean, the Phillies hate Cody Ross. You know, the Rockies hate Cody Ross. I mean, he just seems to do well against certain teams. If it makes you feel better, I feel the same way about Ubaldo. It's like, you know, great, yeah, you might as well activate Ubaldo before our series, you jerks.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Belt, he's struggling. The one solace you can take from it is that a really good Giants blog, Bay City Ball, they did a chart where it's kind of a heat map of what Brandon Belt is swinging at, and he's not chasing anything really. I mean, he is, the balls he's taking are balls, and what he's swinging at, it's really just in that rectangle, that strike zone rectangle. So that's kind of encouraging, but he can have some at bats where he just flat out doesn't make contact. I mean, granted, it was against Clayton Kershaw, but it was one of the worst at bats I've ever seen, where Clayton Kershaw threw three fastballs right down the middle and Brandon Belt didn't touch any of them. I mean, it's Clayton Kershaw. He's good. But that was when my mind started going, ooh, you know, maybe this is a little bit of a rush job. Where previously I'd said, yeah, he's fine. He's taking his pitches. He's working his counts. He's fighting the good fight. But after that Clayton Kershaw at bat, that's when I just started to go like, oh man, you know, maybe a little time in AAA wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. So, you know, I'm hoping he picks it up, and we're still early enough in the season where he can have a couple of 3-for-4s and look just fine at the end of the weekend. So there's still time for him, but with Cody Ross coming back, it's definitely running out.
So, you know, moving away from Belt here, well, I guess it kind of moves with Belt. If Belt goes down, do you finally get to move Huff out of right field then? Not just a rag on Huff, because he obviously had a great season for the Giants last year, but I was listening to Baseball Today with Keith Law and Eric Carabel, and Law basically just says, yeah, he had a great season last year, but now he's becoming Aubrey Huff again. Thoughts on Huff in general? And, I mean, once again, without ragging on him too hard, from my end anyways, it's been kind of poor fielding in right field. I mean, there's been a lot of Yakety Sax jokes going around.
Right.
Give me your thoughts there.
You know, we might look back at the Giants championship run as being, a lot of people like to think, oh, you know, this part's flukish. You know, the fact that their pitcher stayed healthy was flukish, or the fact that Cody Ross came to them in waivers, and then the day before the season ended, Jose Guillen disappeared in the ether because of some kind of phantom HGH investigation or whatever happened there. You know, that was kind of a fluke. It seemed like a lot of things kind of fell into place, but now I'm wondering if we're going to look back and think, man, how did we not notice that Pat Burrell and Aubrey Huff just can't field? Because last year we heard that they couldn't field, and they were okay. I mean, they were fine. You know, you really didn't notice when Huff was in the outfield. You rarely noticed when Burrell was out there. Huff was actually pretty good defensively at first compared to what we were expecting. But we just didn't notice those guys at all. So when Huff signs his contract 2 years, ostensibly play first until Brandon Belt was ready, at which point he'd switch to the outfield. A lot of people were like, hey, that's fine. Let him play a corner outfield spot. He proved he could handle it in 2010. We don't have a problem with him keeping around for 2 more years. He's flexible. And then this year, man, it's like, I don't know. I mean, he just can't field, or at least he's getting the tough balls, or I mean, it's just something has happened that's so totally different from last year. I can't figure it out. I can't figure out if he's this bad, or if every ball that's been hit to him has just been a little funky, and it's just been kind of an unfortunate sequence of events. So, yeah, if Brandon Belt goes down, Huff at first definitely isn't the worst thing in the world.
So, if hypothetically speaking, if you didn't have Pat Burrell in left field, and you moved Huff over to left field, do you think getting him away from that triples corner there would do any good for him, or do you think it would just be the same show in a different side of the field?
At this point, I have no idea. He looked okay. He didn't play – I guess he played 500 innings in left, 500 innings in right last year. I seem to remember him more as a left fielder, but I guess he played his fair share of right. I don't know if left field's going to be any better because I really thought he was okay in the outfield. I thought his range would be a little limited, but he would take decent enough routes. But his routes have been awful. I mean, he's looking, I mean, like I would out there. I mean, that's not really hyperbole. I mean, it's when I played outfield, you know, I was okay for my level, but, you know, I take funky routes. I jump in, I jump out. And that's kind of what he's doing. It's like he's never played outfield before in his life. So I don't know if left field would help him. I don't know if this is just a total sample size fluke. And if you leave him in right, he would be just as fine as he was last season. It's been really weird.
I saw online, or I guess it was yesterday, this preview of the franchise. Have you watched this?
Yeah, I watched the first episode. I did.
Yeah, I was actually very intrigued by this. I had heard a tiny bit about this project, and didn't really pay any attention to it after that. My background's in film and television, so I kind of had an interest in it, but it kind of disappeared afterwards. And now this preview screening was released,
I have no idea what that is. You might want to fill some people in.
Somebody posted it in one of the threads on Purple Row. Showtime Television is basically going to be documenting the Giants season, and they had the crews down there during spring training, and they just released their like 30-minute preview episode, which is basically a lot of interesting, in-depth kind of pieces and interviews where they followed around some of the Giants during the off season, and then saw them all come to spring training. They had some stories on Brian Wilson and Mark Kroon and all these guys who and of course Brandon Belt was featured pretty heavily. And so it's basically just a very simple but interesting documentary about the procedure of the San Francisco Giants, and you get to see it from a very internal perspective. I thought it was pretty cool, actually, and I think I saw some people on Purple Row mentioning that it was so weird to see the Giants so humanized.
Yeah, did they get to the Satan worship part yet?
I didn't see that. No.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sure that's in a later episode.
Mm-hmm. The blood ritual is definitely season two.
Yeah, right.
Can't throw that at an audience too fast.
That's the big cliffhanger.
Yeah. Anyhow, were we done talking about the franchise then, or do we want to keep building on that?
Well, there's not much to say. I was just curious if you guys had caught that. It's an interesting idea, again, from me being into that field. I like the idea of a television program that is following the internal procedure of the operations of a baseball team for an entire season.
Well, you know that ESPN's done that a couple times, right?
Yeah, but I haven't watched any of them. And at the same time, I think you'll have to watch this to get a sense of how unique of a brand this kind of show is. It was edited to be very different from your standard sports documentary. Very personal. You got a really, really close sense of a lot of different players and their personalities and their intricacies and their quirks and so forth. That basically it didn't feel like there was a corporate element to this very much. It was almost all concentrating on the human element of being a professional athlete.
So we're not going to have any moments where Pablo Sandoval steps into the little room with the curtains around and just starts talking directly to the camera, like, man, I don't know how long I can handle this clubhouse, man. Freddie Sanchez has the worst foot odor I've ever heard of smelled in my entire life, and I just got to get out of here.
Seriously, I mean, that's like what people were talking about when they first released the information that they're going to do this. Like, they kept using the term reality show, reality show, reality show. And yeah, you're thinking, like, there's going to be some confessional booth or, you know, there's going to be Pat Burrell, you know, cuckolding half the players in the clubhouse, and everyone hates Pat Burrell because he's sleeping with their wives. And,
you know, of course it would be Burrell, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, illegitimate children all over the place, and you're gonna have,
they have to vote someone off the roster every week.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, like the hubbub that was surrounding it. There's newspaper article after column, and all the newspapers saying, oh, you know, this is a bad idea. And then you see the preview, and what it's a bunch of people. They got cameras, and they're following around these people around. They're letting them do their thing, and it was pretty interesting. Yeah, I mean, I know that the people listening to this right now probably aren't going to want to hear it, but they're generally a bunch of pretty good guys. I mean, it's a really interesting clubhouse, a good mix of people who get along together and kind of make you laugh, a bunch of zany next door neighbor type sitcom characters, and it's a fun group. So I think Showtime made a pretty good decision following them.
And you guys also have a lot of really interesting and diverse types of personalities in there. Like watching all those Brian Wilson interviews, for example, is a real treat because that guy is I don't know where his head's at, but it's so interesting to watch him sort of explain why he's perceived the way he is and so forth.
Yeah, I mean he's 60% act, 40% you know, real deal, and 60% that's an act is really well done. I mean, it's not like I think he knows where he stands.
Yeah, he had a great deal of self-awareness in that interview. Yeah,
I mean he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So, anyways, now I guess we could keep going on making reality TV jokes if we really wanted to here, but let's move back to the field here. Andres Torres, what's the deal with that guy? We've heard that he's been officially moved to the disabled list now, and I thought the running in the pool was going well and stuff like that. What happened?
Yeah, the Giants are real adept at waiting to see if a guy is or is not going to go on the disabled list and wasting a roster spot for a week until they decide, I guess he really is hurt, and then putting him on the disabled list retroactively for the second week. So for a week, they don't have, you know, the 25th man. They do that all the time, and that's just what they did this time. They waited and they waited, they waited. They finally said, well, I guess he's not healthy. So we'll get Darren Ford to fill in for a week. And the week that – I mean, last week, I don't know if you noticed, we had Madison Bumgarner pitch hitting in the sixth inning for pitchers. You know, things that you wouldn't do if you had a full roster. So it's – they put him on the disabled list. They're hoping to get him back when he's eligible, I think on the 21st or 22nd or whatever. And it, yeah, that's that.
Well, all right. That's a very cut and dry answer there.
he was healthy. They were hoping that he would, you know, kind of pull through and be able to pinch hit or maybe even start, in the next day or so. But I think eventually they just got tired of not having that extra roster spot. And so they put him retroactive to the 15th, and he should be back right when he's eligible to be back.
That's good to hear. I mean, I guess not for us, I suppose, but just in a general sense, you never like to hear about player injuries, and, you know, much as we appreciate a disadvantage for a division rival, I'd rather just say, oh, Andres Torres is slumping rather than Andres Torres is hurt. And I never feel quite honest about, you know, saying, like, oh, yeah, we hate the crap out of your team. Yeah, well, half our team was hurt. Yeah, we beat you still. Yeah, good luck when we're all healthy, though. One of the things that came up here, it's been a thing for like a month now, but Freddie Sanchez's extension. How do you feel about that, too? I got to kind of wonder if Freddie Sanchez is, you know, just a fluky player, if he's really the kind of guy you want to extend, and maybe there's just not someone better waiting in the wings, so it just kind of, you know, a holding pattern for the time being for second base. But, you know, give me some thoughts on Freddie Sanchez's extension.
Yeah, it caught me by surprise because he really hasn't proved that he is durable enough to where you just want to throw all your chips into his basket and say, yeah, that's our guy for 2011 and 2012. We're sold. Because, I mean, he's had problems with his shoulder, his knee. I mean, he's not quite the Iron Man. But then I looked and saw what was out there in the free agent market, and I mean, there really isn't a whole lot in middle infielders in general for after the 2011 season. There's just not that magic player that you're going to go out and say, that's our second baseman. And when you kind of factor that in and then you start looking around the league and, you know, who might be available in trade, it's kind of dicey. So if you can lock Freddie Sanchez up for another year at $6 million, it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, it kind of, it's a little disappointing in that, you know, you want to have some sort of magic upgrade that comes out, you know, surprise, you know, what's underneath the box. So it's an all-star second baseman. But it was a pretty practical move, I think. Even if I think the over-under on games he's going to play in 2012 is 100. I mean, he's just not that durable.
Hmm.
And the Jets don't really have a lot in the system either.
Yeah, oh, that's got to be a frustrating moment. I mean, second base is seeming to almost be like the new shortstop, where every team might put all their chips in, let's get a good shortstop, and now it seems that a lot of teams have good shortstops, and now for second baseman, it's like, there's Chase Utley, and that ugly guy's okay, even though he probably should play first or third.
Right.
Anyone else? Anyone? I mean, it just kind of seems to be throwing the shortstop prospect who's not going to be playing shortstop into the second base role, which is what the Rockies are doing now that we have Tulowitzki for, you know, till the end of time. At second base, we have Johnny Herrera at the moment, but the thought was, you know, Chris Nelson, shortstop prospect, will probably move to second base. Hector Gomez, shortstop prospect, second base, and so on and so forth.
Right. No, I mean, the Giants have a guy, Charlie Culberson, who was a first-round supplemental pick a couple of years ago, and he was just terrible his first 2 years in pro ball. I mean, we're talking 600 OPS guy in low A and pretty bad. And then last year in the California League, he did pretty well. I think he something like an 800 OPS, which for the California League isn't great shakes, but it was a much better improvement. But that's about it. I mean, he's going to be up in double A this year, so we'll see where he's at. But I don't think the Giants felt really comfortable with any of their internal options. And then we looked externally. It was basically you were putting all your chips and being able to sign Omar Infante to a 3-year deal or something like that. It was really that's the guy who's going to be the free agent at second base, Omar Infante. So if you were really sold on him and you felt like, boy, we're just going to go and make an all-out effort to get Omar Infante all-star, hey, good for you. But if you're comfortable with Freddie Sanchez enough to give him that 1-year extension, it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, Freddie Sanchez is – fans like him, players like him. I mean, if he's healthy and producing – great. I mean, we're happy to have him.
Sounds about right. So we won't keep you much longer here. Let's look at the series coming up here. You guys are lucky because you're going to be dodging the bullet and missing feared pitcher Alan Johnson on Sunday. but instead,
Alan Johnson is our spot starter. We had a doubleheader a few days ago, so we had to call up a temporary option from our Colorado Springs AAA team, and that's Alan Johnson, who has kind of become an inside joke on our blog. And I won't get too much more into that because we're going to get 50 comments saying about how Alan Johnson has, you know, dreams and hopes. And
no. I'm going to step on that limb and make fun of him, all right?
That's
my job. No, a couple years ago, when it was 2009, when Roy Halladay was first rumored to be, you know, a trade candidate for – you know, the Jays are finally willing to part ways with him. Woody Page, and I'm sure you're very familiar with Woody Page, thank you ESPN, suggested that they trade Greg Reynolds, you know Greg Reynolds. I'm sure you're familiar with Greg Reynolds as well. Alan Johnson.
I was just going to say, Greg Reynolds is from Pacifica, which is about 5 miles from where I am right now. So, yeah, I've been following Greg Reynolds for sure.
Oh, there you go. He also suggested let's see, who were the one other broken starter? Frankly, it was Franklin Morales and
Omar Quintanilla was in there too.
But he honestly suggested Greg Reynolds, Alan Johnson, and Franklin Morales for Roy Halladay, and everyone just laughed at him because he clearly has no idea how Major League Baseball trades work. Because yeah, these are three guys we're not using. I'm sure that to use a steak and potatoes analogy, I'm sure the Jays are going to want to give up this, you know, prime T-bone here for a few potatoes that are growing roots out of them.
This was at a weird time where it was relatively early on in the 2009 season, 2008, I guess, where Alan Johnson happened to be pitching really well in like three starts at AAA. He had like a, you know, 3.0 ERA or something like that. And the idea was that the fact that this guy was at the AAA level suddenly pitching really well over a really small sample size made him an excellent trade chip. And of course he ended up that season with having like a 6.5 earned run average at AAA and so forth. So, I mean, it was just an example of Woody Page jumping to some conclusions about him. And ever since, there's kind of been this inside joke where whenever somebody brings up a trade, we always say, oh, we better throw in Alan Johnson. That'll sweeten the deal.
And then somebody else comes in and says, no, we're saving him to trade for Roy Halladay.
For Roy Halladay.
Anyhow, now that we've let you into all our inside jokes that you probably didn't care about in the first place, you are missing Alan Johnson, but then you got the lucky draw of just having to face Esmiel Rogers, Gibaldo Jimenez, and Jorge De La Rosa. How do you feel this series is going to turn out? I mean, we're going to miss the Ubaldo-Timmy matchup, which everyone wanted to see there, but I mean, with Timmy, Kane, and who do you guys have in the three right now? Is it Sanchez or...
It's Sanchez, then Kane. Sanchez will be pitching before Kane.
My mistake.
They like to do the lefty-righty thing, so yeah, Timmy, Sanchez, Kane.
Makes perfect sense. So how do you think this series is going to go, Grant? We're obviously hoping for a sweep, as the Rockies are clearly the, you know, dominant whatever in Major League Baseball. And run and tear and other trash talk like that.
If only the season were 15 games long.
If only.
Well, you know, I would love to answer that, but I'm right now kind of stuck and fascinated on the Alan Johnson page at Baseball Reference. For example, did you know that he had a 2.77 ERA in 2007?
I mean, oh, no. Really? Please tell me more.
No, how do I think the series is going to go? I hate when the Giants go to Coors Field. It's just – I just hate it. It's just you're always waiting for that seven-run, sixth inning again. You're – like you can never feel comfortable. You get a little lead. You're kind of going through. And I'm not saying that because Coors Field is you know, such a huge hitter's park, you know, which it's obviously tempered down over the years. But – just because that's how it feels when the Giants play the Rockies there. Like, the Rockies are always able to just get that something in the late innings against the Giants. And it just, God, it makes me want to just pound my head against the wall. And to be fair, I mean, it's, when you guys come to San Francisco, it's kind of the same thing with you. I mean, it's always these 2-1 games that the Giants more often than not come out victorious in. So, I mean, it's, we each have our own frustrations in our own home or when we visit each other. So how's it going to go? I don't know. It's the Giants in Coors Field. I'm not expecting a whole lot. There was a while when Coors Field was really Coors Field, when we're talking Dante Bichette, Vinny Castilla, and stuff like that, where I really wouldn't watch the Giants play there just because it just was too stressful.
Yeah,
it was just like, you know what? The Giants could put an 8 spot up in the first inning, and I would still expect them to lose. Why am I doing this to myself? I'm going to just do anything else but this. So it's not that bad. And I really like, you know, I like watching baseball in Coors Field, in theory. You know, now that they've kind of tempered down the offense a little bit. But when the Giants are there, I'm not expecting a lot. I've been burned so many times. It's just, I'm gonna watch it and expect the Giants to take 1 out of 3. And if they take 2 out of 3, that's fantastic. And then, you know, just kind of wait until the Rockies come into town in May.
I just love the "I've been wounded before" mentality there.
Oh, it's so. I mean, it's. I mean, what do you guys? You've been around since 93, and when I started really following the Giants was 96, and then 97, and it just seems like, man, every time they go into Colorado, there's just something just weird that happens, and there was a time where I was just totally done with it. Now, I mean, especially like, you know, the Spillborgs game. I mean, it's just, I was just watching that whole thing. It was the, I don't know, 12th, 13th inning. The Giants had finally gotten to the Rockies. They'd finally done something. They'd done something in extra innings. They finally put that stake into your guys' heart, and then you guys came back and just, oh man, that was the most brutal game. And that's what I expect from Coors Field. I expect every game at Coors Field to be a Ryan Spillborgs game. And so I don't know why I watch it, but I do. And that's what I'm expecting, to be truthful. 3 Ryan Spillborgs games. Extra innings, 14 innings, walk-off home runs in each of them.
Wow.
That's how I feel about Coors.
I'm almost speechless now. I don't even know how to respond to something like that.
I mean, it's never that bad. I mean, they'll take 1 out of 3, or the Giants will have a good game, or they'll have a couple of good games. I mean, it's never that bad, but like, there's just like this apocalyptic side of you. It's like, all right, let's watch 3 Ryan Spillborgs games. Or last year was the Tulowitzki game. where I think he, what did he do? Doubled off the right field wall. I expect every single game in Coors Field that goes like that. And that's just, I don't know how else to put it. I expect every single game in Coors Field just to be a total nightmare with comebacks and explosions and pyrotechnics and crowd going crazy and shortstops hitting balls 500 feet in center field and none of it benefiting the Giants. So, yeah, that's what I look forward to every Coors Field trip.
Wow, well, I'll just go ahead and agree with you.
I'm hoping they'll do well, and I think the Giants are a good team. I don't think it speaks to how, like, me being cynical about going into Coors Field, anything about how I feel about the Giants or their chances this year. It's just that, I mean, one of the most vivid memories I have, this was 1998 when the Giants were fighting for the wild card, and they were in a real close three-team race with the Cubs and the Mets, and they were in Coors Field, and they had a pretty substantial lead, and Julian Tavares was in sixth or seventh inning, and he threw a first-pitch fastball to Vinny Castilla. And, I mean, what's Vinny Castilla looking for? I mean, he doesn't even know that other pitches exist. Like, he's just looking for a fastball all the time. And he hit a home run, and then it all snowballed from there. Nathy Perez hits a home run in the bottom of the ninth or something off of Robnen. I mean, Nathy Perez hitting a home run against Robnen. It's the only reason the Giants had to go to 163rd game against the Cubs. And they lost against the Cubs, didn't make the playoffs. And that's just Coors Field to me. Like, that game is Coors Field distilled. And that's, I expect every game in Coors Field to go just like that game went, just because that's me being cynical about Coors Field.
Fair enough. I mean, you know, once burned, twice shy, I suppose. But, well, here's hoping to a good series. And well, yeah, boy, I'm really just hoping for a series that's free of drama. That's what I'd really like. I mean, baseball drama, fine, with the double plays or the, you know, the ball going over whoever's head or whatever. That stuff's fine. But I'm really just hoping for it to be like an apolitical game, and so to speak, and just be baseball. And yeah,
right. To clarify, I was feeling like that last September too, when the Giants came in and they were in that close race with you guys, more so the Padres at that point, I think. And you know, Matt Cain had the game. I think it was a Sunday afternoon, and I just kept waiting for that Coors Field to come up and just bite Matt Cain. And he didn't. So, I mean, I'm talking a lot of apocalypse here. But there are some times where my cynicism is misplaced. But that's just kind of how I feel every time I go into Coors Field. It might not be true all the time, but it's what I expect. So, you know, last September when Kane had that good game, and it led to the Giants winning the division, winning the NLDS, NLCS, World Series, that sort of thing. It was great. Just, it's not what I expect.
Yeah, I'm not. From our perspective, I know we have some negative feelings about the pitcher's park nature of some of the California parks. I don't know if I feel quite that scared of any of them, but some of them, especially for me at San Diego, I always get frustrated when those fantastic Padres bullpens and so forth just shut down the offense every day.
Right.
And our very talented hitters are set down 1-2-3 and made to look foolish when we're behind by one run. It's 1-0 in the eighth or something like that, and you just can't do anything. But
we have jokes in the McCovey Chronicles where we think they just like scoop up mud and make them like golems, just these relievers. You know, we've got Casey Kasem, and you know, Casey Kasem throws 98 miles per hour with a slider that falls off the table. It's like, what? You know, where'd this guy come from? And then the next year it's like, well, Casey Kasem was released, and now we've got Mark Lukerson. And, you know, Mark Lukerson, you know, he throws a 95-mile-per-hour sinker and a slider that breaks 15 feet. And so where do we get these guys? So, yeah, that's good to know that another divisional rival feels the same way, because it's like every year there's just like these guys.
Oh, no. Pitching is magic. It's like you said, they make magical pitchers. And I mean, Clay Meredith, I think, came from Boston. It must be something in the air down there that suddenly turns you into an unstoppable beast of anger and, and magic. I'm assuming we're talking about like, you know, like almost a Lord of the Rings reference there, where they're digging into the bowels of the earth and pulling the cover off of Luke Gregerson and Joe Thatcher, and you know, giving him a glove and a ball and saying, go forth, destroy the forces of good.
I mean, that's exactly how it is. It's just they're just scooping him up out of mud, breathing some air into him, and letting him rip.
Wow. Well, I wonder if we're gonna get someone like Dex from Gaslamp Ball on here someday, and just kind of wonder how he feels about this whole thing too. Dex, tell me, where do your magical bullpens come from, and do you like have a slave farm in some sort of a third world country where things like that aren't illegal for some horrible reason, and all you do is make them throw fastballs until they're hardened?
Yeah, they definitely violate reliever labor laws or something.
Reliever labor laws. I feel like we'd like a Geneva Convention on how you can farm relief pitchers or something like that. Anyhow, we've had you for a good long time here,
and both of our teams are about to get into a game here in about 5 minutes. So, anything else we want to cover real quick before we let you go?
Honestly, I think we've covered everything, and this has been just too much fun.
Yeah.
All right.
No,
yeah.
Look forward to this series. I mean, no, actually I don't. I really don't look forward to these series. I mean, I'm looking at the calendar right here. I've got it on my desk, and I see these in the Giants schedule. They've got orange for home games, white for road games, and just my eyes are drawn to the white with COL in the middle. And I just look, there's three coming up. There's like two in May. They're just so flippin' annoying. And I see a four-game series in September. That's going to be a whole lot of fun. So, yeah, no, I'm not looking forward to the series. But, I mean, yeah, I am.
Baseball and good stuff like that. But, no, I after this conversation, I think we understand a little more.
Yes.
And we certainly hope that your health is not compromised by the upcoming series, and that you don't, fall off your bed screaming from night terrors of Coors Field. So,
I'm not doing this to kind of poke needles, but I think in the past, a lot of that had to do with, we're never going to win a World Series. It's never going to happen. We're going to all die without watching the Giants win a World Series, and the effing Rockies in that ballpark are going to be responsible. And maybe not in those exact words, but it's just like, that was kind of like the feeling. It's like every loss that takes us out of the playoffs or gets us out of home field advantage or something is just one loss that's going to prevent us from winning the World Series. And I think now that we won the World Series, maybe it's not going to be that urgent. Maybe it's not going to be, that, fire and brimstone, but probably not. Probably after the first pitch, we'll get right back in the swing of things. It's like riding a bike.
Well, Grant, it was great having you on. You were very funny and a great guest. We'd love to have you back.
Yeah, absolutely. No, this is a good time. So bad luck, guys, and talk to you again sometime.
Sure. As always, you can read Grant at McCoveyChronicles.com and also at the SB Nation MLB Hub. So, thanks again, and we hope to have you back sometime.
Absolutely. I really appreciate it, guys.
All right, Andrew, is there anything else you want to add to the end of the show?
Well, actually, now that you mention it, no. it's kind of late on a Sunday. We've all had big days, and it's great to see the Rockies take a 2-1 series at home against the Cubs. Let's hope they can do at least that against the Giants. And I gotta say, it's a real pleasure talking to Grant. And that's all I have to say now. That's all. I had nothing really to add. I just wanted to hear my own voice some more.
That's pretty much the way it always is with you, isn't it? No, I'm just.
Yep, that's why I'm doing a podcast.
Well, I specifically have to get editing this show, and you have a lot of writing to do, so we better get going. So we will be back next week on Monday the 25th, and until then, on behalf of myself and Andrew, we'll see you next week.